Your career is just so broad, and the what you do is so so vast. I sort of struggle to think find a place to start because I want to talk about everything. Let's start with a critical theorist. What kind of works have you thought about as a critical theorist in your training and then in further into your research?
So, my work starts at an interesting point, I think. I got embarrassed by that question because theory sounds so grand and so grandiose, and often it's kind of the end of a conversation when you mention, oh, I'm a theorist, not the beginning of one. That I got very interested in that feeling of embarrassment itself, which has a really important role to play as we interact with people. And it's very hard to define what feelings such as shame, embarrassment, scruple, all these kind of feelings that are very immediate, what they actually are. So I got interested first into the kind of psychoanalytic attempts to frame those emotions, then into the kind of biology of it all. And I realized that mediation, so cultural mediation, cultural norms and values played a big role, and also technological objects played a big role. So that was the kind of beginning of my rabbit hole, I guess, that I went down. And as these feelings are literally everywhere, my work turned out to be quite broad because I kind of went after that.
And then you sort of took a dive at the moment into technology and its place in a sort of a cultural environment in terms of how we interact with each other. Where did that path come from?
That emerged mainly through me discovering the writings of a very curious German thinker called Günther Anders, who wrote in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s mainly. And he had this very curious way of writing about everyday situations. And he diagnosed what he called Promethean shame. So the feeling of embarrassment in view of the humiliatingly high quality of technological objects. It's quite a mouthful. I recognized in the writings of Günther Anders a feeling that I knew from my everyday life. So the feeling that, for instance, my GPS was accusing me of not being very good at navigating, or my word processor of kind of giving me, mirroring back at me that I'm not very good at spelling, that I've got all these errors. And those kind of moments when suddenly technology is experienced in a new way, in a way where we kind of feel to fall out of sync, or we become aware of the kind of encounter with a machine in a way that we often aren't, right? When we're absorbed by it. And then I encountered in the work of Günther Anders, a thinker who tried to suggest, or he suggested, hey, this is a really significant thing. Something is happening to us and to our bodies in the course of the 20th century. Our lives are suddenly filled with these machines, with these objects that have a movement of their own and that kind of our organisms somehow perceive as if they were living beings. And we're kind of very bad at recognizing this. We kind of want to call Siri a she or Alexa a she, even though it's an it. So that kind of effect. And that has all sorts of ramifications that I'm interested in.
What kind of ramifications are they?
Well, the moment we perceive technological objects as independent entities or as distinct entities, we begin to think of them perhaps, or at least this is perhaps one way of viewing it, no longer as human products. And we attribute to them moral agency and kind of qualities that obscure us to the way they work and the constellations of power they create. So, what would be a good example of that? So a good example would be something like a language recognition algorithm that enables us to interact with say, a chatbot or something like that. Now, when we're interacting with that system, we're in fact interacting with a vast data set that is produced by humans. We're interacting with all sorts of protocols that people have written, and they can be programmed in lots of different ways. But the moment we start interacting, we're very blind to all that complexity, and we behave as if the chatbot was just this kind of independent entity. But that's an observation I think we can make, that we forget, or we're shielded from the complexity of our technological environment. And that also means we're shielded from a whole set of decisions and ethical questions that are part of creating these objects and processes. I hope that makes sense.
This may seem like a slightly more benign question. Is that kind of a similar vein as people like naming their cars and having this sort of strange interpersonal relationship with an inanimate object?
Well, absolutely, right? Because those kind of processes signal precisely that on some level, we behave as if these aren't just inanimate objects. And we prefer to see our car as an entity of its own, as a, you know, as a Bruce or Jack or Daisy or whatever you call your car, rather than seeing it as, you know, a human product that was produced out of hundreds of components that could be produced in hundreds of different ways, right? Once we have the attachment, we take it as a given.